Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning, reacting to a 20-13 loss for the Tennessee Titans in the wild card round against the Baltimore Ravens. Their season is done. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2 here in Nashville. Corey, what's going on, man? How we doing?
Good morning, fellas. Just watch the snow come down.
Absolutely. Nice cold morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And, Corey, we've seen a lot of Titans football over the years. We've seen some heartbreaking losses in the playoffs for the Titans. Where does this one rank in your mind against the Ravens, given this team and the circumstances around it?
Well, I don't think it's heartbreaking because they just got beat. You know, you don't feel like, when they played them in 08, or the 08 playoffs, you know, they outplayed them completely. They just turned it over a couple times and lost a game they absolutely should have won, and it was the same, 8 years earlier. But you know, not this time. I mean, the Ravens came in here and punched him in the nose and walked out with the win. They simply weren't good enough.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot, Corey, today about the decision by Vrabel, 4th and 2. Just that whole sequence. What did you make of that, and how critical that was in the final result?
Well, I hate to contradict myself, and because I've been saying, I said all week, and I said after the game that they needed to be more aggressive against a front that was entirely dedicated to stopping Derrick Henry. But at the same time, on 2nd and 2, you would like to think that with 3 Henry touches, you're going to move the chains. And they didn't do that. And so, not being able to take advantage of the Ravens' commitment to stop Henry is what hurt them all day long. And it hurt them in that sequence, because he did check out of the play on 2nd and 2 and took a shot at A.J. Brown, which, like I've said, that's what I was calling for. You had to take advantage of those situations. They were unable to do it. And then, I don't know who makes these indexes that they have, but it was ranked in the 99.9% of cowardly punts.
Right.
There was a coward punt index, and I guess that sequence has happened 4th and 2 inside the 35-50 in the last 4 minutes or whatever it was, or in the fourth quarter, 75 times before. No one has punted before. That's pretty unbelievable. I think when it happened, I wasn't quite as upset about it. But then as I think back on it now more and more, I'm like, yeah, you probably should have just gone for it. Especially because a field goal still keeps you right where you need to be. You're still within 7 points if you give up 7 points. And why do you try? And I know your defense is playing well that day, but your defense hasn't done anything all year long to be trustworthy of punting it and thinking you're going to get it right back. So I don't know. And I think it goes against Vrabel. He's always been, a more aggressive guy. And so I guess that just all made it a little surprising. But I just think it kind of fit in with the day that they weren't good enough.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Hey, Corey, you mentioned Derrick Henry, and obviously the Ravens keyed in on him and were committed to slowing him down, 18 carries, 40 yards yesterday. And a lot of the conversation as we move forward here, and we've already gotten some of it on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, is going to be on Ryan Tannehill and his box score numbers at the end of playoff games and how he wasn't just able to lift this team to victory throwing the ball down the field. Do you think that's fair? What did you think of Tannehill's performance yesterday? And do you think that narrative that maybe he's not good enough in the playoffs to win games by himself is a legitimate one?
Well, I mean, it's something that I've talked about, that last year they won 2 games where he threw for less than 100 yards. And then when they really needed him in the second half, wasn't able to do it in Kansas City. Really needed him here today, or yesterday, wasn't able to do it. Now, Did he have receivers who were open? I don't know. I wasn't at the game. I wasn't able to go to the game. I had to watch it on TV. And you get, I always feel like you get a better feeling from above, being able to see what's out there and what's not out there. You know, there was stuff early in the game. They really worked over Patrick Queen in the middle of the field early on, but that went away. And then, you know, AJ won those few battles with Marlon Humphrey early, but then those went away, and Corey Davis was never able to get going, which was surprising after he put up 118 against these guys earlier last year. So I don't know if I'll say Ryan Tannehill, but I'll say, you know, on a day where they were fully committed to stopping Derrick Henry, the passing game was not good enough to make up for it. If that's Arthur Smith, if that's Ryan Tannehill, if that's the receivers, whatever it wasn't good enough.
So how do you characterize this season, Corey? I think this is a question that really is going to be answered. Again, it's one of those sunshine or gloom, half full or half empty, but you're talking about a division championship, first time in 12 years, talking about one and done and two steps, you know, back from what you did last postseason. So how do you characterize, what's the synopsis of the 2020 Tennessee Titans?
I guess good but flawed. You know, we knew, you know, this team was good enough to win games. This team was good enough to score a lot of points. But, you know, nobody went into the playoffs. I guess there were fans that probably did. But I don't think any of us went into the playoffs thinking that this was a team that was going to go to the Super Bowl. I mean, I don't think that was realistic. Their defense was not good enough where it was going to win three games in a row. I mean, they started the year 5-0. How many of those games did they win at the very last second against some teams that have proven to be very flawed? And they went 6-6 after that, okay? Flip of the coin. They went 2-4 in their last six home games. So, this team was flawed. They won the division. That's great. This team doesn't have a lot of division championships. So, you know, that's positive. And I think the other thing that you have to look at it is you're close. You're not there, but you're close. You need a few more pieces. You've got to get them right this year. That's for sure. I think there's pressure because the window doesn't stay there forever. I think we all knew, you know, this team was good but flawed headed into the postseason.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And I want to ask you about Corey Davis, because the last three games have not gone well, was a non-factor in the Packers game, was a negative in the Houston game largely, and then, you know, two targets yesterday, no catches, and is not available at the end of the game. We don't know exactly what was going on with him. As you look at Corey Davis and the season that he had, which was largely really good for the Titans, and try to balance that with what his cost is going to be, what do you think his future looks like, and do you think he's a member of the Titans next year?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, I've always said I feel like Corey Davis makes them a better football team, you know, whether it be blocking or receiving. I think, you know, overall he makes them a better football team. I don't know what happened yesterday because the head coach won't tell us what happened. And I think that that's a situation where, Mike Vrabel thinks it's none of anybody's business what's going on. He just makes the young man look bad, okay? If he gives some people some information, we can go, oh, he had a severed spinal cord. Now I know I didn't play. But we'd have no idea other than he couldn't go. And I think that lack of information really does him a disservice for everyone. There's a lot of free agent wide receivers out there. I think he's a better fit for them than a lot of other receivers are. That doesn't mean like you couldn't bring in a Will Fuller and he wouldn't help you, but Will Fuller isn't going to be the physical presence of the run game when you want to be a run team. So I don't know. I don't know if the feelings are too hurt over the non-picking up of the tender. I think that's silly when you look at what the price tag of the tender was and what Corey's numbers were. They didn't match. Those two things didn't match. And any person with a brain can do the math there and see that. And I understand that people's feelings get hurt, but, you know, so I don't know if that's going to be too much in the end. I think when the season started, we were looking at Jayon, Janu, and Corey, and wondering where the money would come. I don't think that Jayon will be back at this point, because I think they'll just save their money and go with David Long. And then, you know, so how much does Corey cost? How much does Janu cost? I'll think Corey's back with the team when he signs. So I'll just expect him to be gone until he's back.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, I don't see how – I mean, realistically, you've got to know. There was nobody in the world thought they were going to pick up the option on the number five pick relative to his performance. So I would think that would be a non-factor. But there may be a team who wants to give him 12, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, when this season started – I always said that when they declined the option, they said, hey, we're going to decline this option, but we want you to be a part of our football team. And I feel like if they would have offered him like 4 years and $32 to $36 million at that point, they probably could have signed him, or 40. But now he's going to cost more than that. And so, you know, and somebody will probably be willing to pay more. It's just a matter of what Corey thinks is most important to fit for him. And I think he does fit in, you know, with some other teams. I think some other teams he could be a really good fit for, some teams that like to run the football especially. So you'll just have to wait and see on how that goes. But you saw what that Titans pass attack looked like without him in it, or without him productive in it. You know, when they just could focus on A.J. Brown, things got a lot tougher. Now, I don't expect Adam Humphries to be a part of this team next year, not at his price tag. I think his number's up over $10 million next year. So if you don't have Adam, you're not invested in anyone at that position. And that's why I think they should be able to afford Corey, because they've got AJ for two more years on his rookie deal.
Corey, last thing for you here, obviously a big part of the offseason this year for the Titans is going to be fixing this defense. And I get it. They played well yesterday. I think they match up decently against that Baltimore offense and what they like to do, but largely just atrocious all season long. If you're John Robinson this offseason, how do you even begin to go about fixing this defense? Like, what's your first step?
Hiring a defensive coordinator. That's the first one. Look, players have got to have a person that they buy into as the guy that's calling the shots, all right? And that's talking to former players. They see it as a problem. And, you know, we all see it as a problem. When former players tell me it's a problem, that's when I go, okay, I'm not a complete idiot on this. They've got to bring someone in there to run the defense, or at least name somebody the defensive coordinator so that the players can look at it and go, okay, this is the guy in charge. Because I think that there are players on this team who are better than their production was this year, and that falls on the coaches to me. You know, there are guys in that team that they should have gotten more out of and that they didn't. And then, you know, they're going to need to actually invest at outside linebacker in some guys who can get to the quarterback, because Brooks Reed, you know, an effort guy, has two more sacks than Clowney and Beasley combined. So they've got to make the right choices. They need to draft somebody at that spot. I'm not saying in the first round, but reasonably high, somebody with an actual ceiling and floor that they can get to get after the quarterback, and not an undrafted free agent that they hope can pan out in 3 years. So they're going to have to invest in that spot, and they're going to have to bring in a defensive coordinator. And, you know, they got to make a big decision on Daquan Jones, who's a good player. And, you know, I don't think trading away Jarrell Casey worked out for him like they thought it would. They need to get more from a lot of spots. So, I mean, that's, you know, they're going to have to make a decision on Kenny Vaccaro, I think, you know, because if you say where can they save money, that could be another spot. He looked like he was running in cement yesterday when Lamar Jackson ran by him. And I like Kenny Vaccaro, but he's another guy who's like $6-7 million a year, and you can put Amani Hooker out there. This is like David Long for Jayon Brown as well. You know, these are the decisions that you have to make. I don't ever advocate someone losing their job. I just, these are all math decisions for me. These are me putting numbers on a page going, what works, what doesn't work. So they've got some decisions to make on some guys on who they're going to pay, who they're not going to pay. But it all starts with who are you going to bring in to run the thing? And if it's Shane Bowen, then make it Shane Bowen. But if it's Matt Patricia or somebody else, bring them in. But the structure they've got now doesn't work.
Corey Curtis from News 2 has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexer. Corey, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
All right. Thanks, fellas. Fun season.
Absolutely.
You know what's great, though? I just found out last night, because I just get warped in my football world. One season ends, another begins. We drop the puck on Thursday.
That's right. Absolutely. Looking forward
about
to that.
About that, huh?
For sure. Corey Curtis, ladies and gentlemen, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexer. Appreciate you, my man.
All right. Later, guys.
Corey.
When we come back, what happened to the Titans offensively yesterday, and why were they never able to get Derrick Henry rolling in that game against Baltimore? We'll discuss on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
It's over when it's over, ain't it, baby?
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porter with you on this Monday morning, reacting to a 20-13 loss for the Titans yesterday against the Baltimore Ravens, and taking your reaction all show long. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Joe, one thing that never got going yesterday for the Titans was Derrick Henry and the running game. 18 carries for Henry, just 40 yards on the ground, an average of 2.2 yards per carry for Derrick Henry. So obviously, that's just not typical at all of Derrick Henry, and the Ravens did a great job. But as you watched it happen, as you saw what the Ravens were doing, how were they able to be that successful against the run? Because it's not like the Ravens are the first team that have come in and been like, you know what we really need to do today? We really need to stop Derrick Henry and see if this Titans offense can beat us throwing the ball. That's a lot of people's plan. It's one thing to plan it that way. It's another thing to be able to go out and execute it that way. And the Ravens did as good a job as I've ever seen anybody do, especially in the last 2 years, on Derrick Henry. So, Joe, how were they able to do it? Was it as simple as just getting Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams back into the fold?
Well, let me throw this at you also. Is it possible that Derrick Henry, 34 carries, 250 yards, needing every last inch of it to win the division 1 week earlier, you know, has had some kind of effect on the next week? Was there some kind of cumulative effect of the heavy amount the Titans leaned on him down the stretch, not being able to take a break at all? Could that be any kind of a factor? I think it's possible. I also think that, you know, the Titans never got to – we've talked about the sequence a ton, but it looked like finally maybe they were starting to wear them down a little bit and they go away from them. But I think it looked to me a lot like the Kansas City game of a year ago. Now, early in that game, Derrick Henry did have success, and the Titans had a 10-point lead there too, by the way. The last two playoff games for the Titans, they have had double-digit leads, and they have blown the double-digit leads. But first of all, you just have to win up front, and then you swarm. And it sounds very simple, but the Titans have been very good about not letting teams do that consistently. The Ravens just mucked things up and tackled really well. Again, that 8-yard run Henry had, that was – in fact, I should look that up and see who gets credit for that. That was one guy who I think saved a touchdown there.
Yeah.
But other than that, how many other running – of the other 17 times he ran the ball, you know, how much daylight was there ever?
That was the only time the whole game I felt like he was dangerous, is that 8-yard run.
Yeah, I mean, it's so – they just did a great job. And some of it is that, like you said, you bring in those guys. And so, by the way, that was Wolf. So Derek Wolf is the one who gets the credit for you know, reaching out and stopping Henry on that play, because he finally got some – momentum going. But yeah, I mean, it's just they just won up front, and they were built for that. And this is an example of a team. I mean, they took advantage of the Jacksonville swap meet, man, big time. You know, of course, they still have to go through Minnesota to end up getting Ngakoue, but they get Campbell and Ngakoue. You know, they draft Patrick Queen, who, again, I think, like Corey Curtis was pointing out, man, like in coverage, you can victimize that guy, but that's also another pick to try to fortify your run defense. And it was exactly what they envisioned probably in the offseason in a game like this. Like, we are not letting that dude go for 195 on us like he did a year ago. I think it's mostly credit to them. You know, I mean, Derrick Henry, great player, but this is still forever and ever in football. You know, running backs are dependent on their offensive line. They're dependent on having some kind of a seam, some kind of a glimpse to daylight to be able to make plays, and he had so little of that yesterday.
And you could tell on his face at times that Derrick Henry was frustrated in the game yesterday. There was a shot of him and Vrabel just kind of walking together down the sideline, and it looked like Henry honestly didn't want any part of that conversation with Mike Vrabel. So frustration boiling over for Derrick Henry yesterday. And he was asked after the game about the Ravens and what they were able to do to stifle the Titans' running game in that loss yesterday. Here's what Derrick Henry had to say.
Derrick, on defense, at times it looked like they had 5 and 6 up on there on the line. How tough was it to find any cracks to run through today?
Like I said, they just did a good job. They had a plan, executed their plan. All the credit goes to those guys on stopping the run. Last two times, we had success, and they had a plan to make sure we didn't have that success, and that's what they did. Credit goes to those guys, and did a great job today for them to be able to win the game.
So that was Derrick Henry after the game yesterday, and you don't often see Henry frustrated all that much, but you could tell a couple of times yesterday, Joe, that he was just almost at his wit's end as to what was going on out there. And like I said, like the 1 8-yard run, which was his longest of the day, where he got brought down by the shoestring, that was, to me, really the only time he had a lot of running room yesterday, and a great tackle on that play by Wolf. But other than that, just never really got started yesterday. And when a guy like Derrick Henry just can't even get started and get some momentum going in terms of getting down the field, it's very difficult to operate that way as an offense.
Yeah, so this will be the last one of these for a long time. The Monday John Glennon tweeted Pro Football Focus grades.
Yeah.
Always a wonderful Monday tradition. So it goes to this conversation. The top two grades are Saffold and Davis, 99, the two offensive guards, 90.9 and 83.5. Derrick Henry actually had a bit, season low 48.7, for whatever that's worth. So Pro Football Focus watched this game and said, actually, the blocking was good, and he didn't do well enough. So, take that for whatever it's worth, which often I don't think is a ton. But look, I mean, the Ravens, again, when it comes down to this game, from every angle, I've rabled certainly the 4th-and-2 punt. That's a mistake that I think he's going to stew on, because it just is not in his nature to do stuff like that. And Arthur Smith didn't have a good day, but this is more than anything. The Ravens stepped up and played great. And, they won up front. I mean, those grades aside, I saw a lot of guys on the interior getting off blocks quickly. And that includes rushing Tannehill as well. He only got sacked one time, but I thought after the start that protection was really good early. And there was some kind of pressure on him quite a bit if he didn't get the ball out right away. The Ravens really, this was a great defense. It's always, in the town that loses, it was a terrible whatever performance. Town that wins, it was the great performance on their part, but I think it was more that.
So what did we think yesterday of Ryan Tannehill and his performance? And does it change the narrative at all in terms of the conversation around him being able to win big games and potentially lead this team to a Super Bowl in the future? We'll discuss that when we come back. And also make sure you're tuning in at 8:45. I'll have today's keyword for your opportunity to win a Nashville Predators reverse retro jersey and a copy of the EA Sports NHL 21 video game. And I'll have that for you coming up here in just a few minutes. So a lot to get to still ahead on the show. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tannehill steps and fires, and it's intercepted. It's Marcus Peters who makes the play for the Ravens. The ball was tipped at the line of scrimmage, fluttered, and it's Peters who makes the big defensive play for the Ravens.
Hey, Ryan, I wanted to ask you about the interception. Was that ball tipped at all coming off the line? Did you see Khalif get bumped before the ball got to him? And then also, did you see AJ on the left side of the field on that play?
No, started off on the right. They skied it off, so Khalif inside release there on the seam. He had Peters behind him. Was bodying up Khalif with Peters behind him like this. And from my angle, it appeared he got hit. He fell down, and the ball went right to Peters. So I felt really confident when I threw that pass. It was in a good spot with Khalif being between the ball and the defender. So I felt really confident when I let it go. Thought it was good when it was in the air. Then all of a sudden, you know, Khalif got hit and dropped. So from my angle, it definitely looked like could have been a flag there and it probably should have been, but it wasn't thrown. So here we are.
That was Titans quarterback Ryan Tannehill after the loss to the Ravens yesterday, breaking down the interception by Marcus Peters that almost effectively ended the game for the Titans yesterday. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Joe, as you look at that play specifically with Khalif Raymond running the seam route there, Tannehill lets go of the ball, there's contact on the play, and Raymond hits the deck, Marcus Peters intercepts the ball, the Ravens stomp all over the Titans logo and eventually walk out of there with a 20-13 win. What did you think of that play? Did you think there was a case there for pass interference against Marcus Peters on Khalif Raymond?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a case. I also think, I mean, Khalif Raymond, you know, try not to totally go down on something like that because there wasn't much there. Like in real time, I just thought he slipped.
Yeah.
You watch it, you know, you watch the replay and so on. Definitely there was contact. You know, this is one of those things where it's like, so Vrabel was mad about it and basically like ripped the officials and said, you know, that they're just holding on to try to keep getting more playoff games. I mean, let's also acknowledge like Jerome Boger's crew is terrible. He's bad. It's a bad crew.
He sucks. So
they got a short end of a stick by having that crew yesterday. You know, look, I've seen that called plenty of times, and especially this is said it earlier in the show. As a former basketball official myself, and it's a very hard sport to officiate, different sport, but the guy goes up, gets some contact, and then you kind of wait and see if he makes a layup or not, and then you call a foul if he doesn't. You know, that sort of reminded me that reminds me of this a little bit. Like, man, if there's a bump and then the guy gets the pick, ooh. You know, maybe you throw a little bit of a late flag there, but it wasn't much. It really wasn't much. And you really hope someone like Khalif Raymond doesn't just, you know, get flicked off like a flea like he did on that play. If Corey Davis is running that route, which would have been the case if he wasn't hurt with whatever was bothering him, then he doesn't get bumped to the ground. I can promise you that.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, Tannehill was hot garbage yesterday and couldn't get anything going in the pass game once Henry was slowed. I question if the Titans can ever win a Super Bowl with him due to his inability to take over a game himself. And Joe, fair or unfair, I knew coming into the show today that some people were going to have that viewpoint and that this was going to be a talking point. You look at his stats, he's 18 of 26, 165 yards, a touchdown, and the interception that we've talked about. Nothing there is going to jump off the page from you. And quite frankly, like I didn't walk away from the game yesterday thinking that Ryan Tannehill played poorly or he was a big-time reason that they lost the game. But I do understand that when you have your running back just being stifled, and as important as Derrick Henry is to this offense, you want your quarterback that's played at an elite level all season long to be able to elevate the offense, to get things done in the passing game. And that just didn't happen yesterday. Whether that's on Tannehill, Arthur Smith, the offensive line, a combination of all those things, it just did not end up happening for the Titans offensively yesterday. And fair or unfair, I think that's going to be a talking point this offseason. When you look at Tannehill, his postseason performances, purely based on the stats and the numbers in the box score, they have not been great. And I think, you know, a lot of Titans fans are going to wonder, is he really capable of leading this team to a Super Bowl when maybe you're not getting the best game out of Derrick Henry in that offensive line?
Yeah, look, it's fair to question Tannehill after this game and say he wasn't great, and he had to be great yesterday, and he wasn't. He wasn't good enough. I mean, but this is also your viewpoint. We had someone earlier who was like, did he miss any passes? Well, I mean, he might have missed a couple, but he certainly missed some reads. And he didn't make the plays. He didn't make a big throw. You know, again, in that earlier in the game, you get to the 10, you have two plays after you run Derrick Henry on first down, and it goes nowhere. But you have two plays after that. This is where Tannehill, you're used to seeing him identify something, zip that ball in there, and score a touchdown, and he didn't. So He didn't do the job. But I will flatly reject anyone who says you can't, you know, get to a Super Bowl or win a Super Bowl with Ryan Tannehill. That's inaccurate. That's false, because Rex Grossman and Jeff Hostetler and Brad Johnson and Trent Dilfer would like a word with you. He certainly is Tannehill, you know, Tom Brady in his prime, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes. No, but let's also go with the larger pile of evidence again, not one day. And you tell me that Ryan Tannehill isn't good enough to get a team there. Of course he is. He's got to play better in these big moments, though. There's no doubt about that. And you're right, Robbie. It was clear that this was going to be a talking point today, and it will be until he goes into a playoff game and probably not just wins, because let's remember, he's 2-2 as a Titans quarterback with winning plays in both of the wins, but probably wins a game and has 250-plus through the air.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the standard that he's held to, and I get it. I Corey Curtis, I think, is right. You needed him to play better in the second half against Kansas City, and he wasn't able to deliver. I mean, you needed Ryan Tannehill yesterday to elevate what was admittedly a depleted receiving core, and who knows what was going on with Corey Davis. And I thought Arthur Smith had a bad game, but you needed Tannehill to elevate the team yesterday, and he couldn't do it. I thought, you know, we haven't talked about this a whole lot yet. You know, there are a lot of big moments in the game yesterday, but I thought one of them was, you know, it's 10-10. Lamar has just made the huge play, and he's run for the 48-yard touchdown, and the Titans get the ball back. I mean, that next drive begins, and you've got the ball, and Arthur Smith calls a screen, which really hasn't worked one time for the Titans all season long. The ball gets batted in the air, and Tannehill catches the ball and loses 10 yards on the play, and basically that drive is shot at that point. So you're hoping for a big response from your offense. Baltimore's got all the momentum. They've just tied the game up. It's 10-10. And you're hoping your offense, like they've done so many times this year, can lead you right back down the field, get the momentum back on your side heading into the second half. And obviously, I get it if you're Tannehill. Like, that play where the ball's hanging in the air is just instinctual, right? Like, you catch the ball when it's in the air. That's what you've done your whole life. He's a former receiver, so you're not just going to let the ball hit the ground. But I thought that decision by Ryan Tannehill to catch that ball and then ultimately lose 10 yards on the play, I mean, the drive is just totally done at that point. And that, to me, was also a big point in the game that we hadn't talked about a whole lot yet.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be smart. I mean, this is a playoffs. And, I mean, you knew at that point that after all your work, and if it looks so great, now it's tied. Okay, Lamar gotcha. I think that was a huge moment in the game. I think that changed the game, that play by Lamar Jackson. But, okay, 2:32 left. You know the Ravens get the ball to start the third. So this is perfect amount of time for this Titans offense, as it has played all year. Get into the two-minute. Tannehill gets in a rhythm. You go right down the field, and you can't catch that ball. I mean, those are the moments. Like, don't catch that ball. You know, see A.J. Brown, although I'm more sympathetic to that because his first read was there. But you had A.J. Brown to the left. You didn't throw him. Don't check into, you know, the play that on second and two when maybe, you know, Derrick Henry is just kind of getting into a rhythm and has a chance to start battering that defense. I mean, so some of this is just mental errors too. It all goes into it. I mean, there's no way, if you watch the coach's film of those two red zone plays or goal-to-goal plays in the second half, that there wasn't somewhere for him to throw. I'd be shocked if there wasn't. You know, but he didn't throw, you know, he came off and he had pressure and he had to dump it down. That's all tough. It wasn't easy for him. The Ravens made it tough for him, but the best quarterbacks overcome that and make plays anyway.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Fred from Ashland City texts in and says, I just don't get what happened to the offense. They came out and were driving up and down the field and had players like Firkser killing them. And then all of a sudden, they just couldn't do anything. I know the Ravens may have adjusted. But there's no way they took away all the weapons. It just seemed like they weren't focused. Maybe they thought they got relaxed after the lead. Now, I would hope that's not the case where you're up 10-0 with this defense and you got relaxed. And I don't believe that that was the case. But it was interesting that, you know, you come out, you're moving the ball pretty well. And then all of a sudden, for the next two quarters, you just can't do anything offensively. Like, the passing game's not working. Obviously, Derrick Henry never got rolling in that game. So either the Ravens made some great adjustments or Arthur Smith did not have a great day calling plays, maybe a combination of the two. But it was interesting just how up and down the field they looked and how in sync they looked on the touchdown drive to A.J. Brown to get up in that game and then build the lead up to 10-0 eventually at that point, and then just get totally stifled offensively for the rest of the game.
Yeah. I mean, some of the answer is definitely, I think, the first down running. I mean, that next drive, we've gone through this a little bit, but the next drive after they go up, their second, third drives are great. You know, the next drive, it's Henry for one on first down. It's Henry for zero on first down. You get a sack of Tannehill on third and five. Like you said, they try the screen and it blows up in their face. I mean, some of it is circumstance, and then the Ravens hold the ball and move the ball. Even though you gave up 20, you did give up 400-plus total yards. You did give up 236 yards on the ground. So even with this, great overall bottom line defensive effort, it was a 33-26 split in time of possession in the Ravens' favor, and you that just limits your opportunities. So the Titans didn't take advantage of those opportunities. But I understand the question. It's like, how does this just disappear? We're so not used to seeing that from this offense this year. And that's what happened. And a lot of credit to the Ravens. The Titans are going to look at a bunch of plays in this game, probably four or five plays in particular, play calls / plays, and really regret them.
So what's happened with Corey Davis in this offense over the stretch of the last 3 weeks, and how is that going to affect what his future looks like with the Titans or potentially elsewhere? We'll discuss that when we come back. I'll also have your key word of the day for your chance to win a Nashville Predators reverse retro jersey and a copy of the EA Sports NHL 21 video game. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And I've got today's key word of the day. Today's key word is goalie. Again, today's key word is goalie. Text it in now to the game text line at 615-737-1025 to be entered for a chance to win a Nashville Predators reverse retro jersey and a copy of the EA Sports NHL 21 video game brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. Make sure you're tuning in tomorrow at 8:45 for the next keyword. The winner will be announced on Thursday, January the 14th, which is this upcoming Thursday. And also make sure you're tuning in every Preds game day morning at 8:45 this season for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, also brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. So make sure you get those texts rolling in to our text line now at 615-737-1025. So, Joe, speaking of the text line, let's go back there very quickly. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, when Marcus caught a batted ball in the air in the playoffs, he scored a touchdown. So I will take this opportunity every time that we compare Tannehill and Mariota together. I always bash Mariota. He's got the edge in that category. I'll give it to him.
He is a much better self-passer in the playoffs than Tannehill. Boom, in your face.
Thank you. Yes, I'm glad that we've stepped.
Boom, roasted.
Thank you. So. Oh, man. So we've talked a lot about the ineptitude of the Titans offense. You're not able to really get anything going yesterday for a sustained period of time. But added to that list was Corey Davis. So Corey Davis, zero catches yesterday on two targets. Towards the end of the game, is not even available for the offense. And you mentioned the interception, Raymond running that route. In a normal situation, it's probably Corey Davis running that route. And you look at the past three games against the Packers, and then the Texans, and now in the playoffs against the Ravens, and Corey Davis has largely been a non-factor the last few weeks. So what do we think's happened with Corey Davis, and how do you think the way that this season has ended for Corey Davis maybe affects what his future looks like, either here with the Titans or elsewhere?
Well, it's really hard to answer the question of what happened, although I would say that the fact that he was on the sideline yesterday makes me wonder if there wasn't something that has been bothering him, maybe, although I can't recall him on the injury report. But Corey Davis, that is part of his time in Nashville. He's had a variety of injuries. Corey Curtis said earlier he thought Vrabel did him a disservice, and I think essentially saying, because Vrabel didn't come out and say he was hurt or he had this, but I mean, Vrabel, I'm gonna go back to Vrabel's quote. He said, I mean, obviously he wasn't able to go. I mean, saying to me, when Vrabel said he wasn't able to go, that was Vrabel confirming injury, which is about as good as you're going to get from Vrabel.
Right.
I mean, Vrabel's never going to be like, yeah, you know, left ankle tweak, 2 to 4 weeks. I mean, so I still took Vrabel's comment as confirming some kind of an injury. Was that new yesterday? Was it a lingering thing? I don't know. I mean, a lot has obviously gone on with Corey Davis this year. Losing his brother, just tragic, to cancer. You know, receivers coach Rob Moore said last week in interviews, you know, the game against Houston was the, I believe the, I think it was his brother's birthday.
Yeah.
He also just had a baby daughter. A lot of stuff going on in his life. And, you know, I'm saying, like, he's a professional football player, making a lot of money. So, you know, you got to perform on Sundays. But it's worth mentioning all these things. And then maybe there was some kind of lingering injury. That is when you look at Corey Davis and you think about moving forward, how important is it to keep him? I think it's important because, again, I think he also really fits the offense well, the style of offense. I think he's a big part of it, running and passing. But you do keep those injuries in mind as well. They've cost him different parts of different seasons. He's had a variety of different ones. And, you know, durability is definitely a thing that you have to keep in mind here.
It is, and it's been interesting to watch the conversation around Corey Davis evolve this year. And, you know, I remember the big free agents discussion we had to begin the season. It was with Jonnu, Jayon Brown, and Corey Davis. And quite frankly, at that time, I think we had Jonnu Smith number one, Jayon Brown number two. And Corey Davis, in terms of our priorities, was a pretty distant third at that point. And I think it got to the point, you know, week 10, week 11 of this season, and the body of work that Corey Davis was putting together, that it totally flipped. I mean, obviously Jayon Brown got hurt, but Corey Davis was playing really well, and Jonnu Smith, really, I think, to no fault of his own, became a lesser part of the passing offense just based on Lawan and his injury and how many times Jonnu had to hang in there and help protect. But Corey Davis, I think, you know, to me, became the number one priority in terms of offseason, you know, priority list for John Robinson to make sure are back next year and in the fold. And I still feel strongly that they should bring back Corey Davis. I think he was very good for them this year. I realize the last three games have not gone well, but to your point, Joe, the dude's been going through a lot this year. And injuries, I mean, there's not much you can do about that. That has been a part of his story. But I do wonder, like, if you're a Titans fan right now, based on the position that he plays, how the season ended in the last three games, and knowing that heading into this draft, I mean, it's loaded at receiver, what's the priority level for John Robinson to bring him back? Because if they don't, you better make sure that you either bring in a free agent that hits or draft a guy that hits. Because we saw yesterday the depth that they have, and it's not very good. That came back to bite them in a big way yesterday. And if you lose Corey Davis in addition to that, you better make sure you hit on a draft pick this year if you're John Robinson.
Well, right, and then you hit on a draft pick and you're still really questioning your depth, because I think we would all assume right now Adam Humphries won't be back. I don't know if Adam Humphries will play in the NFL again. And so now there's two of your top three if he goes, and 4 and 5 are great stories, great locker room guys. They've done some good things, but you want to be better there. You want to be better at 4 and 5 than you are with Raymond and Batson. So there could be a big overhaul here. And the thing is, if you're thinking about drafting a receiver, you better count on that guy being able to come right in. And that happens more and more in the NFL, but you can't just count on like an AJ Brown happening. I mean, you know, you got to allow for some kind of growth. So how strapped might you be if you go that route and you're dependent on a rookie receiver? And if you're doing that, don't you have to be drafting pass rushers right now, you know, to help your defense? I mean, it's the whole picture of it kind of revolves around what you're doing with Corey Davis. I still think I might go Jonnu Smith as my top priority if I were ranking him today, just because I just think Jonnu Smith is a special talent, and we forgot about that because of what happened to this offense and this offensive line this year. But go back again and watch the Titans play in September. I think that's a guy that you really want back for everything he brings to the tight end position. But if you could bring them both back, I think you would. And then obviously that means that you are almost for sure moving on from Jayon Brown. Is that the right thing to do? I mean, that's a loss too. There's a lot of tough decisions here for John Robinson. I don't buy the idea, and I've heard some people say this, that because Corey Davis, you know, struggled down the stretch, you know, that makes it easier to move on from. The Titans know what he is. he's a very good player, and he's been a big part of this season. You just have to look at how much it costs. And then, I mean, the health factor with him is something you have to talk about.
It is. And the other part is, you know, when you look at this offseason and the decisions that the Titans are going to have to make, part of it's a balancing act too, because obviously, I mean, you've got to fix this defense. I mean, there's got to be some level of pass rush that you can count on. You've got to hire a defensive coordinator, in my opinion, heading into next year. So there's a lot to be done to fix that side of the ball. But you also don't want to lose any part of this offense either. Like, this offense, for the large majority of this season, even when Taylor Lewan went down, was very productive, was, I think, obviously the best offense the Titans have ever had, but an elite-level offense in the NFL. And what you don't want to have happen is, yeah, you fixed your defense back to a point next year where it's not great, it's not even really good, but maybe it's average at that point. But now your offense is also average because you've lost Corey Davis. Adam Humphries is not a part of the fold. You can still run the ball pretty well with Derrick Henry, and A.J. Brown's great, but you don't have much depth outside of that. Like, you don't want to get to a place where both sides of the ball are average. And I think that's got to play a factor into your decision-making if you're John Robinson. Is, number one, what does your offensive coordinator situation look like next year? If Arthur Smith is gone, how do you handle that? But number two, you want to get this personnel back together because they've proven at this point with Tannehill at quarterback, they're going to be one of the top-level offenses in the NFL, and you don't want personnel to change so much where that's a big question mark heading into the season.
Yeah, and you think you're losing your OC probably.
Yeah.
So, you know, how much – I mean, that alone has to give you some concern about the offense, but it's sort of the question of, do you want basically the offense to return intact, but maybe it's kind of marginal improvements on defense? I mean, certainly this defense was so bad, you could make a couple moves and you might still have massive improvement, even with a D coordinator, which doesn't affect your salary cap or any of that. That might make a big difference on its own. But or do you want to really invest and really try to change over that defense while having to sacrifice, you know, some of the familiarity and reliability of the offense? It's an interesting question.
So real quickly, I'll put you on the spot. Do you think Corey Davis is back with the Titans next year? If you had to guess right now, and obviously there's still more information, more things we're going to learn, do you think Corey Davis is a part of this team next year?
I'm going to guess no, based on, I just always assume when someone has a good year like he did, that someone out there is going to, you know, overpay or at least pay more than the Titans are willing to pay. I don't think it's a thing where they didn't pick up his option and just forget about it. Like, that happens a lot in the NFL, because realistically they were never going to pick up his option. But I'm just going to guess no, because I think someone out there is going to pay him to move on.
I would agree with that, Joe. I mean, Corey Davis, fine player while he was here. I think the last 3 weeks kind of changed my opinion on whether or not he's a top priority. When you look at Jonnu Smith with a healthy offensive line, Jonnu Smith is a player that is hard to find in how versatile he can be as a tight end. So I would probably prioritize Jonnu number one and go get a receiver in the second or third round in a deep draft class when it comes to that position.
Yeah, I mean, that may be the way.
You have to sign people too.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot on the checklist for John Robinson and the Titans as they look ahead to this offseason. So obviously, we're going to have plenty of time to talk about that and the moves that they're going to make, but I think the conversation has gotten a little bit more interesting around Corey Davis over the past 3 weeks. When we come back, our man Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donick and Chase and the Predators pre- and post-game show, will join us. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans, the loss to the Ravens, and also a couple of scrimmages over the weekend for the Predators. Who stood out? We'll get into all of that next. This is Robbie and Rexrode, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.